Good morning.
Good morning.
Hope you all got a little rest this holiday weekend. Hope some of you got to watch the World Cup. Yes?
Yes.
Awesome, awesome. Well, I got a rather unique glimpse of the World Cup. Last August, I applied to be official FIFA World Cup volunteer. And I was selected. I was so excited. And I was selected to do something called fan operations wayfinding. And that's basically helping people find their way, which I thought was kind of funny. And my job was basically this. Keep coming, keep coming, keep walking, keep walking. That's for like 2.5 hours. You know, I went to 7 games thus far, got to watch them. And thankfully, I got promoted. So I got promoted to be on a seat, kind of like those lifeguard chairs, you know, where you can climb up the ladder. And I got a bullhorn, so watch out, because I had the bullhorn. And I was stationed at the gates of the stadium, and it was after something that was called the last mile. You see, basically, anybody who comes to the stadium after parking, after getting there, getting dropped off the bus, everybody has to walk this last mile to the stadium. And if you can imagine, 70,000 weary spectators all trying to get to their gate. And as my task, my upgraded promoted task, was to be spreading positivity, I took it very seriously. Welcome to the World Cup. You've got this. Keep walking. Keep coming. Keep smiling. You've got this. All right. All right. All right. And people came in every condition that you can imagine. There were people dressed as bullfighters for Spain. There were people dressed as George Washington and then my bullhorn, happy 250th. And people in wheelchairs. I'm told a lot of celebrities. Don't ask me which one, because I'm not into pop culture. Though I do know that Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce did get married, so I know at least that part about it. Every kind of person was all walking this last mile together. And one person stood out to me. He was a visually impaired man walking the whole mile not by sight, but with people next to him. And when I called out, like, you've got this, you're so close, you're almost there, he gave me like this fist pump, like, all right. And he had the biggest smile on his face. And I was like, all right, I feel so good right now. And that was just a really cool, cool, awesome moment. So come to me, all that are weary and carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Not that you've arrived, stopped, but keep coming, keep walking. In the biblical Greek, come here is plural. Jesus is not calling one exhausted person forward at a time. He's calling a whole crowd together. It's the same word used at the beginning of Jesus' ministry when he calls fishermen to leave their nets and to come. Come be something that you can be more together than as if you were alone. Before that invitation, though, Jesus named something a little harder to sit with. He says, to what will I compare this generation, he asks. And he describes the children in the marketplace calling out to each other, complaining that no one will play along. We played the flute for you and you didn't dance. We wailed and you didn't mourn. John came fasting, and then they said he had a demon. And Jesus came eating and drinking, and they called him a glutton, a friend of sinners. Sometimes with a generation, you just cannot win. And sometimes it's already decided, people have already decided what they want to think or what they see and what their minds are already made up. It's really hard to please everyone. If you fast, you're too severe. If you feast, you're too loose. And I find it comforting that even Jesus couldn't please everyone. So I guess I won't feel so bad about the emails I will may receive after the sermon saying that this is too common of a sermon or that I talk too fast or anything like that. If Jesus can handle criticism, so can I. And Jesus faces his own version of this. He doesn't seem interested in winning the argument. He doesn't, you know, go to bat necessarily. He simply does what he does best. He eats with the wrong people. He heals with the wrong on the wrong day. He says these hard, tender things anyways. And while everyone is looking around sideways, sizing each other up, they're looking to the left, looking to the right, sizing people up, looking where their faults are, what does Jesus do? So people are side to side. He looks up. He looks up. He starts to pray. I thank you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because you have hidden these things from the wise and the intelligent and revealed them to infants. So the key thing here is that the revelation occurred to the infants, those that are the least qualified, those not necessarily with the credentials, who'd earned the right to speak or the right degrees, and those that had all the confidence in the world, those are the ones that missed what was standing right in front of them. And the ones that had no standing in society at all were the ones that understood. Access to God was never earned, it was just given. Some of you have been told throughout life, plainly or quietly or implied, that you didn't qualify, that you weren't the right kind of person to be close to God. And maybe that came from an old church or an old family, or a wall that you built yourself because it was easier than risking saying no. But here Jesus is saying that that wall was never what separated you from God. And then having said all of that, Jesus turns to the weary and says again, come to me and I will give you rest. And we've seen this and heard this on many different types of plaques and stained glass windows and so forth. But this type of rest is different than the holiday rest. It's not the type of just sit down, let me kick your feet up, have some hot dogs, watch some fireworks type of rest. This is kind of the rest from burdens of kind of the large societal pressures and the big things that we struggle in life. Kind of a rest from a deeper type of rest. So when I was volunteering, I stood at the end of this long walk and I could encourage people, I could tell people, like, keep going. But one thing I couldn't do was get down from the ladder and help people walk along this trail. But Jesus can do something different. He doesn't necessarily stand the whole time at the finish line cheering us on. What he would do, he would be climbing down the ladder and he would be walking the road with us. He doesn't keep saying, keep walking, keep going. He walks with us and says those words with us. And here's what I want also folks to notice, because it's really easy to miss. He doesn't say, come to me and I'll take the weight from you, and so now you can sit down. He doesn't say, let me grab your backpack and, you know, you can walk without the backpack. He says, let me take this yoke upon you. Now, in those days, a yoke wasn't something you just buy off the shelf. It's custom fit, and Jesus, being a carpenter, probably carved a couple of those himself. Yoke is not necessarily a private rest. It joins two items or two people, or not two people, but two animals together, so one's not necessarily pulling alone. And I just finished reading this book by the Episcopal priest and writer Barbara Brown Taylor called Seeds of Heaven. And I like that she made this point directly, that the one who pleases God were never the ones strong enough to carry the heaviest load alone. They're the ones that were willing to share it. And that's what Jesus is saying in this gospel. Not the absence of labor, but company within it. Walk with me, he's saying. Not instead of walking, but with me while you walk. And I think that's what today's colic is also asking us to do. Not the determination, but grace, that we may be united with one another with pure affection. And perhaps that is what the church is all about. Not necessarily a place to prove yourself, but a place where tired people can join together. And somehow being around tired together, united, somehow brings about joy. Every Sunday, there's probably somebody sitting next to you that quietly thinks, can I go on? Perhaps it's with parenting or caregiving, grieving, recovery, aging, and beginning again. The church has never gathered because everybody finished and crossed the finish line. The church gathers because weary people still need someone to say, keep coming, keep walking. And I think about that visually impaired man who smiled at me so big. He trusted the voices that he could not see. He walked that whole last mile by faith and by the people around him, not necessarily by sight. And maybe, just maybe, he understood something that the rest of us that are so busy looking at each other and judging each other miss completely. And isn't that what Christ does? And isn't that what we are called to do, to walk by faith and sight? In a little while, we will celebrate the Eucharist. And that's after we prayed for the world and for each other. And we'll do exactly what Jesus invited weary people to do. We'll come to this table, not because we've earned our place there, or we have figured out all of life's answers, or have the best dress, or because we have our act together. We come here because we were invited here by God and by grace. And this is where it happens, where we come together united. And so hopefully at the end of the day, you'll remember just one thing from this sermon. When you're weary, keep coming. And when the road feels really long, keep walking. And when you can't imagine taking another step, remember that Christ is already walking beside you. And that, my friends, is good news to smile about. Thanks be to God.